but you wrote the whole thing.
If you'll join me now in a moment of prayer, please. Loving Spirit of mystery, of life, of possibility, God of the journey, who sometimes shows us where we have been, who sometimes takes us there in order that we might remember that we have taken the leap into a new life before, that we have faced the unknown, and we have taken the next step. Help us to continue to take that next step into the mystery. And grant us an awareness of your presence near as we journey forward. In your many holy names we pray. Have you ever had a major life-changing experience, but when you got through with it, you didn't quite know what to do with it? Well, you are not alone. When I graduated college, it was a huge relief on the one hand. It was my goal. It was the thing that I had worked toward for 4 long years. All right, let's be honest. Is 4 and a half. I worked several jobs, and as a result, I slacked off with my credit hours here and there. At least that's what I told myself then. And while it was indeed true, I wonder now, looking back, if it wasn't also me just putting off the inevitable, my graduation, which would also bring with it the unsettling question, the next step. What now? So the relief I experienced upon graduation was tempered with uncertainty and fear. I mean, I had just completed the most amazing 4 and a half years of my life, filled with more peak experiences than I could ever possibly number. I had changed and I had grown so much. I'd learned so much about life. I'd learned so much about people, about the world around me. And yet, when I received that piece of paper, that expensive and much sought after piece of paper, I had no idea what to do with it. I had learned how to learn, but I had not yet learned how to live. So I moved in with my parents. Now, that was not a huge problem. They were happy to have me. But then I started sleeping late. And then staying out late and sleeping late. And before I knew it, it seemed as if I had turned back the clock 4 and a half years to my senior year in high school and an endless summer. It's what was comfortable to me. But all the while, I was also aware that I was not the same person that I once was. I was a different person, and I didn't yet know what to do with that new person, what to do with myself. Now, I've seen this often in the trans communities, where someone has turned their entire life upside down and shaken it, left everything that they knew, often family, friends, and job, in pursuit of a new life, and labored very hard to pay for bills and treatments and therapists and hormones and all of the multitude of peripheral things like electrolysis and voice training, living a wholly uncommon existence, one of great potential social isolation, and yet one with a unique social kinship, a community with its very own mysterious language and shorthand. It is an existence, a life that is so set apart from anything even remotely similar to anyone else's life, with experiences so unique, both beautiful and horrible, that they defy understanding by anyone else, unless they have known them and experienced them for themselves. All the while, there is some kind of vague goal in the distance, final surgery, final documentation, or whatever it is that the individual determines is their finish line, is their final step. It is a journey with excitement, momentum, and purpose, such a peak experience that there is no follow-on. There's no second act. There's no part two. It is so intense that so often when the individual does cross the finish line, they may have learned how to transition genders, but they have not yet learned how to live a new life. It also happens when one comes out as gay or lesbian. Coming out, there's a bright light on you. A whole new life in front of you is frightening, amazing, new. There are clubs, there's parties, there's new friends, there's scary moments. Everything is so electric and crazy. You learn so much about yourself. Some people say, good on you. Someone else writes a homophobic slur on your vehicle. Some people adore you. Some people hate you. So there. Now, regardless, something new ends and something amazing, a peak experience, a time of living life unlike any you have ever known. Then this amazing event that you have just gone through concludes. It ends. And instead of going forward into the unknown, instead of immediately leaping forward into the mystery, which is something which you have done before, I might add, something which you do know how to do, because otherwise you never, ever would have had that amazing experience in the first place. You know how to jump into the unknown. Yet instead of leaping forward into the unknown, you go fishing. You go back to the clubs. You cruise the nightlife. You sleep late. You look for old friends, even though you are now no longer the same person that you once were. You find yourself jumping backward in time, going back, trying to repeat the same sequence that brought you to the place where you are now, but it doesn't work. Your nets keep coming up empty. You may feel lost, and while you may feel alone, your experience is by no means unique or new. It is as old as dirt. It's as old as the first fire on the first beach. Now, sometimes our course of learning brings with it unexpected fruit. I was at the beach a lifetime ago when an assortment of friends, and we saw a bumper sticker that said, "Fish naked." Have y'all ever seen that bumper sticker? Am I the only one? One of my friends laughed and said, "Cool." Another one said, "Ooh." One said, "Yuck," and another said they would have to try it. Usually men and women seem to have a different opinion on this. Now, then one of them asked me what I thought, and I shrugged and I said, "It's biblical." They were like, "No, everything is biblical with you, but this can't be true." I said, "Yes, it is true, and it's a part of the good news." Another friend said, "Now you're talking." Still another promised me a meal if I could prove it. I showed them John 21, verse 7. Peter was naked. But here's the real catch. It has to be the right translation. Because while the original Greek word that was used is very clear on the matter, more than a few translators seem a little embarrassed about using the naked word. They did a lot of linguistic calisthenics in order to avoid it. Many translations say stripped for work. I do know people who do that. One says no clothes on. Another improvises with half measures and says stripped to the waist. Another says wearing nothing underneath. My favorite, lightly clad. But I knew the translation. The King James Version minced no words here, as well as the New Revised Standard Version, one of the better Bible translations. And so I got a free meal as a result. But all of this not only stresses the importance of Bible translations, but begs the question, why on earth would Peter be fishing naked? Who knows? And who knows why the writer felt it was important enough to mention. It's a mystery to us. We would not have known otherwise. Now, maybe it was something that Peter did. Maybe it was something that they all did. There is a work of art that depicts a boatload of naked men for this scene. It is puzzling to us here. We who have complicated thoughts about the unclothed human body, with translators who shy away from even thinking about using the word naked. It's puzzling to us. We who live 2,000 years away in a different culture, on a different continent, in a different religion with a different language. It is a wonder that anything translates well at all. And yet, it does. Because this scene we have today, it's like a Hollywood ending to a Hollywood movie, because a good ending is usually a good beginning. Now, let's step into the scripture for a moment. It's about a week, maybe a little more, after the crucifixion. And the gospel might have died right then, there. We have the disciples together on a beach by the Sea of Galilee. Almost the exact same followers as we talked about last week when Jesus first gathered them together. These rough, hard-working fishers by trade. And Jesus telling them that he would make them fishers of people. Fishers of people. Such a grand and lofty call. On what may have been the very same beach 3 years earlier. Such adventures they had known in the time in between. Such a new life they had lived, unlike any they had ever known before. They had done great things. Rough hands that had known only the haul of the net on the Sea of Galilee were for nearly 3 years hands that healed the wounded, hands that liberated the imprisoned, hands that held the lonely, hands that fed the hungry. They had indeed fished for people. And now those very same hands had gone back to fishing. Fishing for fish. Perhaps in that very same place, the same beach where they first encountered the stranger. That strange rabbi who had turned their worlds upside down and changed their lives forever. What full circle synchronicity, underlining the circular nature of our lives. And they had been out all night fishing, and they had caught nothing. So going back to fishing for fish, it wasn't working out too well for them. Now they're about 100 yards out, and this person, the stranger on the beach, calls out to them, "You got anything to eat?" And when we think, even when we think, God is dead to us, are we open to an encounter with the divine? Are we open to the possibility? Are we open to wonder, to seeing a stranger before us in a divine light, recognizing the divinity within them? The stranger addresses them as children, immature, not even young men. They respond they had caught not a thing. The stranger then encouraged them to try the starboard side, the other side of the boat. Try the other side. They do, and they get a huge haul. Now, it could be that the stranger on the shore had a better vantage point and could see a shoal or perhaps a school of fish on the other side, something that those in the boat could not see because of their perspective. And how often in life do we try to go back and try one thing when we should be doing the other? How often is our perspective limited by the very thing that we are looking at? How often do we need to try the other side? How often do we need to look elsewhere? Regardless, this event is sometimes called the miraculous catch of fish. And again, it mirrors an earlier story of Jesus at the very beginning when he was gathering his disciples in the Gospel of Luke. Luke 5, 5, and verse 6. Again, that synchronicity, as if to say to the disciples, hey, remember those stories. Do you remember when? Remember what we did together? We did amazing things. We made miracles. Then the disciple that Jesus loved, the beloved disciple, recognizes Jesus, and then Peter jumps out of the boat and swims to shore. Again, this brings to mind an earlier event that is similar. When Peter, the rock, left the boat to reach Jesus, tried to walk on water and sunk like a rock. Here he is once again, leaving the safety of the boat to meet Jesus. Jesus on the beach, on that threshold between one thing and another, that transitional place between land and sea, on the beach with the fire going and fish already grilling on the barbie. And the rest of the disciples come in with a net full, 153 fish. Can you picture them counting them? Why that number? Well, people who fish always count their catch. Even when it's crabs, if you watch Deadliest Catch, they always need to know what they have caught. Sometimes it's to meet a quota. Sometimes it's for bragging rights, as fishers are wont to do. But also there is the thought that it was believed that there were 153 different types of fish in the world at that time. And so the hint is that every type of fish may have been caught by the disciples, even those the Jews considered bad fish, not kosher due to a lack of scales. So here there were no bad fish. Be fishers of people for all kinds of people and hold them together in community. Jesus said, bring me some of your fish. Fish you have just caught to add to my fish here for breakfast. Let us pool things together so that we might share together. And again, this strikes a similar story with the loaves and the fishes and the feeding of the 5,000. And then Jesus asked Peter, do you love me more than these? Do you love me more than these other disciples? Or do you love me more than these things that you're doing, all of this? The exact meaning of that phrase is unclear. In the mystical way of the Gospel of John, it could be either. It could be both. Then Jesus responds, feed my lambs, tend and feed my sheep. Nourish those who need to be fed. Care for those who need care. And the exchange went on three times, a reminder, perhaps not so subtle, of the three times Peter denied knowing Jesus. Again, remember, you have been here before. How many times can I say that? You have been here before. And then the next words, again, the synchronicity, the fullness of the circle, the very same words in parting as the first words from the first encounter. Follow me. Follow me. Did Peter know what he was getting into then? Probably not. Perhaps no more so than when he left that beach, that place of transition, after hearing those words 3 years earlier. In fact, in the verses that I did not include today, it's possible that Jesus told Peter that this would not end well for him. But I would think that would be evident given the fate of the one he followed. It reminds me of a quote by the theologian Friedrich Buechner. The grace of God means something like this. With God saying, here is your life. You might never have been, but you are. because the party would have been incomplete without you. Here is the world before you, your life before you. Beautiful and terrible things will happen. Don't be afraid. I am with you. That is the grace of God. Going back to where we once were after an amazing journey is not necessarily a bad thing. It may be the universe's way of reminding you, the cosmic Christ's way of saying, you got this. You got this. Remember who you are. What you have been through, remember what you learned. There is a reason you are back here again, and it is to remind you that you have done this before. That once upon a time, you took a chance. You took a chance and you chose adventure. You chose adventure over fishing. When you choose and you chose to follow me 3 years ago. Stepping out of the boat and onto the beach. It may seem harder and more scary this time, but you've done it before. And look at how far you've come. We really can't go back in life. Life flows in one direction only. But sometimes I think when it seems we are going backward after a big adventure, our soul is actually knowing what it's doing, calling us. It's trying to show you that you've got this, to remind you that you know how to do this. See, remember this. Remember when you took a chance on the unknown. You have done it before. Sometimes we need to go back to where we were to remind us of who we are. I'm going to say that again. Sometimes we need to go back to where we were to remind us of who we are. Remember when you followed me. Do you remember it? Good. Now, take the next step.